is growing every day. If you had to distill its message down to a slogan, you might say it's
Yimby is yes in my backyard.
Are you they welcome a lot of city projects in
their backyards. But we hit the road with a few members to hear their plea for a better network of bike lanes throughout Denver.
The show for you and KBOO Portland is the place to be.
We found ourselves veering into the bus lane more than once just to avoid cars.
Broadway does not currently have any sort of bicycle infrastructure, so this is the if you're a cyclist and you have to go this way, which happens sometimes, this is the least unsafe option that we have.
They took us down Broadway, the future site of a protected bike lane, to show us what they see on any given day.
It was terrifying trying to get across. It's not a comfortable ride.
Good evening. It is 7 o'clock and you are listening to Progressive Community or Progressive PDX Progressive Talk Radio. I am Sherry and I am stepping in for Moses tonight. He's our normal host for this evening, the fourth Wednesday of every month here on KBOO 90.7 FM. And I have some content to share with you. As I was coming into the station, I was considering what we were going to talk about, and some of what we're going to discuss tonight is campaign finance reform. And in campaign finance reform with Honest Elections, Moses is actually representing Honest Elections Oregon at the Willow Creek Washington County Dems meeting tonight. He should be speaking right now about the efforts of Honest Elections Oregon and CFR, or campaign finance reform. So in the campaign finance reform arena, I-9 is the petition that we're working, I-8 and I-9 are the petitions that we're working on to have real campaign finance reform on the Oregon 2024 November 2024 ballot. If you want to learn about I-8 and I-9 for the Oregon 2024 ballot, go to honest-elections.com, and I'm going there right now. Hold on one moment. And you'll click on the I-9 link at the top of the page, and that will take you to all of the presentations. The it apparently is being slow tonight, so let me go to the I-9 link at the top of the page, and you will learn all there is to know about why I-9 is such an important piece of legislation for the 2024 ballot. Basically, our last gubernatorial election was $80 million, and that's expensive. The election before that was $40 million. These are historical numbers, and they have underlining consequences. So if a group, a nefarious group with tons of money, decides they want to back a specific candidate, they can throw millions and millions of dollars at this candidate, their campaign, PACs that support them, and have their agenda met rather than the agenda of the people. And I do need to make a quick apology. I accidentally came in at the end of another broadcast, and I do apologize. I will make up for that. We have some great activities happening here at KBOO for the kids and the youth collective, and they come in just before this show, so everything's kind of hectic, and I do apologize for that. Back to Honest Elections, you will see petitioners across the state from now until July 5th of 2024 who are working as advocates for I-9 and I-8. I-9 is the legislation that will essentially take big money out of politics. And I-8 is the legislation that states it can't be overturned if the people in our Oregon state legislature don't like it. So we will be hearing from Moses later on this evening regarding his talk with the Washington County Dems. Currently, there are no limits on spending for campaigns across the state. We are only one of five states in the nation that has no campaign spending limits. For-profit corporations would be banned from giving candidates giving contributions, and then sensible limits. We want sensible limits that get rid of $1 million contributions to candidates. We want to shine a light on dark money. This makes campaign ads list out the four biggest funders. So say some vanilla named organization, the one that's commonly used is the Association of Good Puppies, or the Business Corporation of Good Puppies is putting out a campaign ad for Jim Bob, the candidate for governor. And I'm going to leave a designated party out of this. So Jim Bob is candidate for governor, and Good Puppies is supporting his candidacy. Well, Good Puppies is a PAC, and they are supported by other people or businesses in the community or in across the state that give them money. Well, we want to know who those associations are. Are they individuals? Are they organizations? Are they corporations? And if so, who are they? Because it's important to understand the agendas of the people giving contributions, no matter in what frame, in kind, cash, or through PACs. So these are super important. And another frame for shining a light on dark money on in politics is that we want legislation that reveals the true big money sources, as I previously explained, and then requires faster public disclosure from public contributions. And finally, our third objective in this petitioning is we want to repeal Oregon's law that allows bribing public officials with campaign contributions. And that is a thing. That go to honest-elections.com to learn more about the accusation of bribing public officials with campaign contributions. That is huge. That is a lot of reason why the campaign contributions in themselves and the agendas behind them are a lot of the reasons why school funding has gone down. Our property taxes continually go up and corporations continually pay less in taxes. All of these people have rice bowls, and they are supporting their little rice bowls by contributing billions, millions and billions to campaign organize or campaign PACs across the nation. And it's specifically bad here in Oregon. And then it lets independent judges, instead of partisan officials, rule on enforcement decisions. And then I-8 ensures the legislature cannot repeal I-9. So it stops politicians from repealing campaign finance reform laws passed by the voters, like I-9 here in Oregon. In 2018, I believe it was, we Oregonians passed legislation to implement campaign finance reform. Unfortunately, all we did was tell the legislature, okay, you can vote on campaign finance reform. We did not tell them that what requirements we wanted, and I-9 will remedy that situation. Honest Elections has already successfully initiated campaigns and had policy put in place in Portland and Multnomah County that meets these requirements for campaign finance reform. The last time anything like this came on the Oregon state ballot or was applied to the Oregon state ballot, it won by 78% of the vote. So this is important. It's something that we need. And what I'm going to talk about next falls right in line with the ramifications we are seeing, because politicians many times will get into the game because of the money, right? You don't come into politics as a millionaire, and some people leave as one, and that's what's really sad. So on the way in, as I'm thinking about this, there are some stories that came across the past couple of weeks across the news, KGW, and some here at KBOO and others in across online resources, talking about crime, drug addiction, homelessness, how, you know, the troubles that Portland is having. When I'm not here or working in marketing or whatever, I drive for Lyft as of recently. And this has given me a great opportunity to meet people all over Portland and people coming to Portland to visit. So I pick up passengers from the airport, or I take people to the airport. I pick up passengers going to work, some going out for coffee with friends, and I talk with them. And the people that I picked up in Portland over the weekend, I picked up four different sets of passengers who were visiting, and all of them loved Portland. They said how beautiful of a city it was. Two people were here from Michigan. I took them up to the Japanese Garden in the hills, and they were so excited. And the place was crowded. The garden had tons of people walking around. There was no parking. So people are coming. We have a beautiful city. But things fall through the cracks. People fall through the cracks. When you have industries coming to Portland that pay people significantly more than what people who live here generally would make, you're driving people out because they can't afford to live here, because those people who earn more and can pay more are noticed by landlords who increase the rent. And yes, over the past few years, legislation, thanks to Chloe Udaly and Joanne Harnessy and a few of the other Portland City Council people, have put through policy that has staved off some of the no cause eviction issues. But the rents are still incredibly high. A normal rent for a two-bedroom apartment in Portland is as much as many people make in an entire month. And a lot of the requirements of landlord or property management companies, actually, we have almost no private landlords anymore. Everybody's corporate. They want you to make it used to be three times the rent. Well, they can't do that anymore. So they lowered it to half. You have to be able to make half of what the rent is. And they're going to soon not be able to do that. So we're in a really messed up situation. And I believe a lot of that has to do with the issue of campaign finance reform. Because if you pay politicians to do your bidding, your agenda is being met, not the agenda of the people who live in the community and are suffering because of your agenda. So one of the issues that came up, KGW, the story, and I am a fan of KGW. I watch them as much as I can. I think the news team at KGW is fabulous, but I really think we don't get a good service out of them when they are simply towing the corporate line. And the story, ever since Dan left, they've been towing the corporate line. And while I've been impressed with some stories and not so much with others, Ashley was the, and I don't remember her last name, but she was the host of the story for this instance, this episode. And I really like her. I've watched her ever since she first came. And Kyle was in this episode as well, and he's okay, you know, he's cool, but they're tapping the corporate line, even when in their episode their guests stated what needs to be done. So they were talking about the closing Target stores in Portland. There's three of them, one on Southwest Morrison, one on Southeast Powell, and one on Northeast Halsey. Granted, all three of these locations are not like Portland's shiny stars, but there are people that live in these areas and they're suffering. 80% of, I think his name was Martin Castaway, is who Kyle was interviewing. He is what they called a quote unquote prolific shoplifter in Oregon or in Portland, and he is currently serving time for his crime. Kyle sat down with an interview with him and said, you know, why do you believe this is happening, and what do you think can resolve the crime issue? And as I was thinking before I ever saw this, a lot of the people, if you look at what they're stealing, they aren't stealing candy bars. They're stealing clothes, electronics, things you can sell. And a lot of them, my first inclination was, well, it's the cost of living in this area is incredibly crazy. And most of these people in the areas where these Target stores are struggling. So they might be making minimum wage. They might be supporting a family of three or more. They might be doing all of these things. Well, come to find out, and this is my naivete, you know, trying to be, you know, look at the positive side of trying to help people. 80% of these people, from what Martin was saying, are likely addicted to drugs. Okay, so in my brain, I'm saying addiction is a medical issue. Addiction is something that needs to be addressed via the medical community, not Portland Police Bureau, right? But of course, after Martin explains this, Martin says treatment. We need more treatment facilities. Now, a lot of you might be sitting there shaking your head, oh, the treatment thing. We're so tired of hearing about that. That is the foundation to helping many of these people, is more investment in treatment programs. Measure 110 has turned into a fiasco, yes. Why? Because it was implemented, in my mind, backward. You don't tell people, oh, free for all, do all the stuff on the streets you want before you set your plan in place. As I recall, the plan was to open up treatment centers and to open up job training and finding ways to get people their ID so they can get jobs. In the 80s, it used to be if you didn't have a physical address, you could not get a job, because they couldn't. Their excuse at the time, the employers, was, oh, well, we can't find you. We didn't have cell phones like we do now. Cell phones in the 80s were huge bricks that sat in cars of rich people. They weren't the little mini computers that we carry around every day today. So you couldn't get a place unless you had a physical address. So, and many times people would go to family. Can I use your address for this application? Today, it's a little easier for people to find jobs being homeless, because they have, thanks to the Obama administration, they have access to smartphones that they can use to look for positions that, you know, via taxpayer funding. And they don't necessarily need a physical address, though they don't have ID, so they can't cash their check. Excuse me. They don't have a social security number necessarily on them. You know, they need to see on your I-9, they need to see your documentation. They don't have a lot of the things that normal people would have to get a position. So this is something else that Portland needed to implement, right, along with the job training, education, and treatment. Get those things in place and then open the doors when you have people out, like the street response. You have people out promoting, hey, did you learn about the new treatment center just down the street? They're offering, you know, a bed for 60 days or however long they would offer it. It could be months because it does take months. You know, they're letting you stay there for 6 months and they're going to help you get clean and they're going to help you do these things. You know, we're going to give you a bed for a week and kind of feel it out and see what you think. You're giving people the basic necessities they need to function in society. It's called Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and the bottom layer is safety and security, shelter. Once you give the people these things, they can start opening their eyes. They're not scared. And I hear a lot of the people complaining about the homeless who are living in, you know, $1.5 million houses in Laurelhurst because they've never been there. They don't know what it's like. They don't know how hard it is. They don't know what it's like to live in survival mode for years on end, to not know where your next meal is coming from, to not know if your lights are going to be on tomorrow, to not know if you can feed your child today. They have no idea what that's like and the harm that it does to people. So they want nothing to do with any remedy that might be out there. Now, I will hand it to people for being, yay, positive on trying to move forward with passing Measure 110. What I don't like is the fact that it was implemented backwards. They had no infrastructure ready. They had nothing ready for these people. When they said, oh, sure, go do whatever you want. It's hard to walk through the town that I grew up in, for the most part, high school, and watch people doing dope on the street. Seriously? But I'm a supporter of Measure 110 because I believe had it been implemented properly, that would be something we wouldn't see hardly at all. And if we did, it would be taken care of as soon as we got people help that they need. So anyways, the Target stores are closing because of theft, and there's a lot of complicated issues behind that. So one thing about working with Moses and the other people I work with is it's really started to open my eyes to the fact that nothing is black and white. You can't say, oh, get a job, right? Because they may not be able to. Just because somebody can walk and talk doesn't mean they're mentally okay. And just because they can walk and talk doesn't mean they have a skill set to get a job that they're going to be able to work in any kind of capacity. So the other stories on here, one that I don't know if campaign finance reform really has anything to do with it. It's just somebody trying to do good for the city and a business saying, we don't like that. So City Nerd is on YouTube. So I was watching YouTube. Of course, I watch YouTube all the time. For anybody who knows me, I watch YouTube way more than I should. If you're interested, go to City Nerd, his channel, and he's talking about the PBOT issue with the bike lane on Broadway. I'm going to open up the phones here in a minute. If you have discussion about the PBOT issue with the bike lanes on Broadway, I think it's horrible because the bike lanes that are being put into the city are inclusive. They're allowing people, when I was in high school, I didn't get my driver's license till I was 18 because I lived in Milwaukee, Oak Grove area. I took the bus everywhere or I walked. And I did that even when my children were little. We'd take the bus everywhere or we walked or we take Max. I was one of the first people to ride Max when it was first created, when it was first built. Max was the best thing ever. And it used to be way more fun. It's not that fun anymore. But anyway, it used to be really fun. If you have a points on the Broadway thing, I think the hotel, while they need to maintain their revenue stream and they need to make sure that their customer or their visitors, their guests have a great time in a beautiful city, taking away something that makes that city inclusive is wrong. I'm falling on that side because Portland's a biking town, and that's a great big issue for a lot of people in the area who drive the great big trucks, and they don't see any reason why people need to be riding their bike in the rain and stuff like that. I just think it's sad. And City Nerd actually does a great talk about this. He's talking about the bridges and roads, and I unfortunately did not catch the title of that. I thought I did. He's a transportation expert that helped build some of the newer bridges and that bike lane path. The next one is The World According to Briggs. I've watched this guy's videos a few times and want to talk about this video. The real reasons why everyone is leaving Portland. One, not everyone is leaving Portland. He's only been here since he said 2010, I think, is when he first moved here. And he started doing videos on Portland in 2015. He believes that there are many reasons why everybody, quote unquote, is leaving Portland. But the biggest concern that I had with his video was he talks about young people leaving, and that's from what I've seen, that's true. And it's really sad because Portland's motto used to be, I'm not sure anymore if they can say it, but it used to be where young people come to retire. And I know that Portland offers a lot of opportunity for young people, and the reason why they're leaving is the high cost of living. They can't pay what landlords or want for rent, and the cost of buying a house is astronomical, especially at 7%+ interest. You can't expect somebody in their 20s to be able to buy a little one-bedroom bungalow for $400,000, not to mention a naked piece of land in Clackamas County for it's an acre piece of land, and there's a few of them. It's 1 acre, naked land, no plumbing, no infrastructure set up. It's just grass or dirt. $500,000. Seriously. That's untenable. How are people supposed to buy houses in Clackamas County, much less Portland? That's a huge reason why young people are leaving. And that is actually something I've been complaining about. I'm a digital marketing professional, and I've spent a lot of time complaining on Facebook. But that's one of the biggest issues I've come across in the Portland and Multnomah County and Clackamas County areas. Washington County has always been super expensive. But Clackamas County and Multnomah County have been reasonable up until about 2015, 2016, and everything started skyrocketing. The median house price in Portland, Briggs was saying, was over $300,000, but today it's actually closer to $500,000. I think it's $462,000 was the last I heard. Google's a great thing. Median house price in Portland is, and it's coming up, the average Portland home via Zillow, the average Portland home value is $532,000, $532,323. That's down 6.5% over the past year. And it says houses are pending now for about 11 days. So turnover has improved. I mean, at one point, turnover was you were selling a house once a month. And then it was crazy. You'd have a ton of offers on a single home in a week, and the home would sell generally. So our markets fluctuated up and down for quite some time. Back in May, via Bankrate, the as of March 2023, Portland median home price was $502,000, and that was per Redfin. And they stated at the time, back in May, that that was an 8.7% decrease since the same time the year before. And so that's in Portland. So this tells you, this is blatantly why, even back in the Oregonian, OregonLive.com, March 20th, 2021, the average price for a Portland home in the Portland area rose to $542,000, according to Regional Multiple Listing Service, the RMLS report. That was in 2021. So these prices in Portland have just been incredibly difficult for people just starting their careers. Heck, come here to retire. Why? You'll never be able to retire. So, and I hope the city, somebody from the city of Portland is listening to this, or somebody from the county, because I don't know if anything can be done about that, but something has to be. And rents are ridiculous. Let's look up average. Oop, it was bringing up average rent in Portland. Now, I'm just talking Portland. I'm not talking Oregon. Via Rent Cafe. And I believe this is for today. Well, Zumper might be more accurate. It actually gives me a date. As of September 2023, the average rate for a rent for a one-bedroom apartment in Portland, Oregon, is $1,468 a month. This is apparently a 2% decrease compared to the previous year. So if you are making minimum wage, is that really something you can afford? I'm going to take a wild guess and say no. We are halfway through the hour. I do need to let you know that KBOO is having their fall fundraiser. We are trying to earn $55,000 during this fall fundraiser. And Anyway, so if you are of means and able or want to contribute to our fall fundraiser, I need you to go over to KBOO.FM and click on the donate button. And I believe they have the fundraiser on here. Click on the donate button and just whatever you can give. Whatever you can give is fine. We also have KBOO Sounds of Democracy Fall Drive Limited Edition T-shirts. I don't know if you saw this, but there's only 23 days to buy one. And so if you go to KBOO, KBOO.FM on the right-hand navigation pane, they have an image of the T-shirt, and it says KBOO Sounds of Democracy Fall Drive Limited Edition. KBOO is entering our 55th year of serving the community, and what a better way to celebrate than a fall fun drive. And this shirt is awesome. It's $40, and you can choose between gray, red, and green, and it says Sounds of Democracy, and you can see the picture on here. And we've already sold quite a few, like I believe half of our goal has been met so far. So if you can go on over there to kboo.fm and get yourself a t-shirt and maybe buy a few for your family, that would be cool too. Or just hit that donate button. We're trying to earn $55,000 during our fall fundraising event to keep the lights on. And It's 7:33. I am going to open up the phones. If you want to call and talk to me about anything that we've spoken, I'm waiting for Moses to call. So if Moses calls, we're going to talk to him real quick. But if you want to talk about, let's see, the crime in Portland and why the Target stores are closing on Southwest Morrison, Southeast Powell, and Northeast Halsey, about why you think, quote unquote, everybody's leaving Portland, or the bike lane debacle, go ahead and give me a call at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And I will be so excited to talk with you. I had a couple of things saved on my phone that I wanted to talk about, and right now, about campaign finance reform also. If you want to talk about campaign finance reform, I am here. If you want to learn more about IP8 and IP9, go over to honest-elections.com and you can click on the Petition 9. Oh, somebody's calling. One moment. Well, that was a false alarm. Again, the phone number is 503-231-8187. Go to, if you want to get involved, even as a petitioner, you can click on contact. You can click on contact if it'll let me. And on contact, on our contact page, or on the Honest Elections contact page, if you want to volunteer to get signatures or you know, help with the petitioners, email volunteer@honest-elections.com or call 503-568-1664. That's if you're interested in helping with petition drives and gathering signatures, or, you know, just letting people know about IP8 and IP9. All the information is at honest-elections.com. You can also email volunteer@honest-elections.com or dial 503-568-1664, and they'll be happy to help you. So if you want to call and talk about a couple of different things I've got going here, so KGW's story on the story about why the Target stores are shutting down, they believe that it has a lot to do with drug addiction. What do you think Portland should do about the drug addiction issue that seems to be fueling these crime instances? If you watched the story, for this story, one gentleman in their interview was very distraught about Target closing the downtown store because people in the area need that resource. Granted, these were not the superstores with all the food and clothing. These were smaller stores and probably stores that didn't perform as well as others might. But the people in these areas still need this resource for their living, right? So they need to feed their families, they need to clothe them, they need these things. And having the store, that resource gone, really, really impacts their life. The biking lane debacle, I think, is more of a selfishness on the part of the hotels on Broadway, because they believe that their guests apparently are impacted negatively by a protected bike lane. With the decrease in bikers in the area due to COVID and a lot of people working from home now, I'm not sure why it's even necessarily an issue. And I heard that PBOT actually was the one that let the story out to the public as well. While I'm waiting for people to call, I do want to let you know that KBOO has tons of volunteer opportunities. I'm actually a board member with KBOO. We had our 55th annual or our 55th birthday block party this past weekend. It was fabulous, and I actually had to leave around 3 o'clock, and I found out later that it rained. But until it rained, we had a fabulous showing. A lot of people came. We had some great entertainment. We had some African dancers. We had some comedians and some music, and we had some vendors, both food and material, some beautiful jewelry, and a lady who sold CBD products like soaps. She was fabulous, and she had some other offerings. She's in the area, and unfortunately I forgot to bring her name with me. Anyway, so if you missed it, you missed it. We have a ton of volunteer opportunities. You can have your own show. Sign up at kboo.fm, and I believe it's /volunteer. Let me see for sure. So it's kboo.fm/get-involved-volunteer. And the list is never ending. So you can have an on-air public affairs host show like this, like PDX Progressive Talk Radio. You can have an on-air music DJ show. You can do podcasting. We do have some great podcasting suites here. At least one or two spaces where you could podcast. You could be a newsroom reporter, an anchor, producer. You could do facilities. We can always use facilities people, so janitorial, equipment maintenance. If you're handy with equipment, we can always use you. Website maintenance, social media, reception. We can always use reception people. Data entry, tabling at events. Tabling's really fun. I've done that. You get to meet a lot of people from the community, talk with them, learn about them, and tell them about KBOO and all of these opportunities. And then you can do, we always need photographers. You can use your cell phone, or if you're, you know, a photographer with a real photography camera, of course. Special events and benefits. We can always use help with volunteers with setting up and tearing down, organizing, ticket takers and so on. Remote broadcast production. So a lot of people, since the pandemic happened, the station is now open, but it was closed for some time during the pandemic. KBOO actually put together a system where people can upload their music or their shows from home. So if you have a broadcast equipment at home, or even a mic and music on MP3, you can create your own show and have it uploaded. You can be anywhere in Oregon and do this. You could be in Bend. We're in Portland, so that's a long drive every week, right? Or even once a month. So just do a remote broadcast and upload it here. And you can do live music engineering. Our events are a blast. We have a great time every year at the Waterfront Blues Festival, Cathedral Park Jazz Festival. This year, we did the Montevilla Jazz Festival. We do all kinds of different events. We did Good in the Hood in the spring. That was a blast. Events all year round, at least mostly in the summer during festival, but in the spring as well, and then now in fall. Physical and digital music library maintenance. If you haven't seen the library for KBOO, we just met our 55th year broadcasting community radio. If you don't think we have an awesome library of music, you need to get in here and take a tour. So archivists, so people who archive shows, and then grant writing, we can always use grant writers. And then there are more volunteer opportunities than I actually have time to share. But you just, you know, email volunteer@kboo.com. That's volunteer@kboo.com. And you can speak with our volunteer coordinator about how to get started. We have a full board now, but in the future, we could need new board members. So email volunteer@kboo.org, and you'll talk with Nate, and he's our volunteer coordinator, and he will help you get all settled in with volunteering here at KBOO. And I just found this. That's interesting. Okay, so the phone number here, if you would like to call, is 503-231-8187. I don't bite. You're more than welcome to call and talk with me. You don't even have to talk about these stories that I went over. Do you have a concern about things happening in Portland? And if so, what would be your idea to remedy the situation? The phone number is 503-231-8187, and I look forward to speaking with you. 8187, yes, that's correct. So, regarding campaign finance reform, that is actually the theme that we're going to be, Moses and I are actually going to be speaking at the Clackamas Dems meeting in November on the 22nd. We're going to be speaking with that community about campaign finance reform and why it's so important that we get this initiative, IP8 and IP9, submitted and on the ballot. The submission date, our deadline is July 5th of 2024. And we need to get it on the ballot so people have a chance to voice, to have their voice heard. So these states that have no limits on, we are one of five states that has no limits on federal or financing campaigns, right? We are number 49 of 50 states with the worst political finance regulation as of 2015. We are one above Mississippi. The states that have poor political finance regulation include North Dakota, Virginia, Indiana, Wyoming, Oregon, and Mississippi. We are one above Mississippi. And these initiatives are really popular in Oregon. In 1998, it cost about $1 million to campaign for governor. In 2002, it was $15 million. In 2006, it rose up to, I want to say, $18 million. In 2010, it was $20 million. To run for governor of Oregon. We did see a significant decrease in 2014 when it was approximately $15 million. And then in 2018, it shot up to $40 million. That's how much it costs to run for governor in Oregon. That's incredible. So the total so far is $45 million. Dollars for three candidates, breaking the 2018 record of $40 million. So governor candidate monies in 2022. The total for that was $45 million for three candidates. These are slides. I'm going through slides on the website. You can go to honest-elections.com/slides, and you will learn on the fifth slide that Betsy Johnson's donors gave her more than $200,000 in most cases, $200,000 or more. Phil Knight led the crowd with $3,750,000. Do you know he gave Newt Bueller an incredible amount of money? I don't remember exactly off the top of my head what it was, but it was more than $3 million. I want to say it leaned more towards seven. And he gave Betsy Johnson $3,750,000. And then there was another woman that was running for governor before Bueller, and he gave her money as well. But see, he wants his agenda met. Not, he doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about, you know, the people who peons in Portland. He cares about his agenda and serving the people he hangs out with, right? Kind of like somebody else we know. The Pate Group, it's a heavy machinery group, paid Betsy Johnson, or donated to Betsy Johnson's campaign, $750,000. Fury's Timber, I'm probably saying that wrong, donated $250,000. Sierra Pacific Industry, another lumber company, $500,000. Tim Boyle of Columbia Sportswear, $664,000. I mean, these numbers are incredibly crazy. Kathleen Jones McCann from Seneca Lumber, $350,000. These numbers are insane. I mean, a lot of these people, those are amounts that we used to be able to buy homes for, right? $250,000, $350,000. It's like, where do these people get this money? $664,000 just to throw at a political candidate, right? And just to throw at, that's politicians set policy under authentic, actual candidacy and real governance. Politicians set policy for the betterment of the people in the community, not themselves. And many of these people work for themselves. So a national study of anti-corruption did some grading in 2015, and Oregon received a great big fat F. Public access to information was F. Political financing, F. Executive accountability, F. We know that. Legislative accountability is a D-. Procurement, F. Lobby disclosure, F. Ethics enforcement, F. We have a caller. Sorry for the downtime. One moment. Okay, we have a caller. Hello, how can you have a comment?
Oh, hi there. just wanted to call in and say, if folks aren't aware, as far as this is just more general about economics, so many people are just totally not aware of this. The shrinking of the middle class has been intentional, and it's not just because people are greedy at the top. It's because they want to kill democracy. There's an article by Tom Hartman entitled, quote, "Why Oligarchs Don't Just Want to Be Rich, But Kill Democracy Too," unquote.
I've heard him talk about that.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of this interesting vicious cycle, I feel like, because, you know, people are greedy, and they want to be allowed to be greedy, and then when people are greedy, then the people who are being abused get really upset, and they act really upset, and then the people at the top who started the abuse are like, oh no, look at these, you know, crazy people acting out and being all upset. This is a horrible societal upheaval, you know, and it's, I don't know, it's this weird, like, trauma cycle.
Right. You are exactly right. And many people don't know about that. They don't, I think they're so busy just trying to survive and feed their kids and get them through high school. Lord forbid they are able to put them into college, but they're just going about their own daily lives. And I believe that campaign finance reform is a significant issue in that capacity. The powers that be, those that govern over us, have made life so challenging that, and there's some conspiracies theorists that say that they've made it so hard for people to live that they have no power, right? Because people in a productive society that's maintained positively, the people have power to stand up and say something. And there's some conspiracy theories saying that many of the people in the upper echelons are doing this on purpose so we don't have power to say anything.
Well, that's actually, and in Tom Hartman's article, which you can look up, it's on the website Common Dreams, he actually goes back to England several hundred years ago. He mentions there was a law, I mean, this is like public record, saying explicitly that England actually had a maximum wage law. Yes, you heard that right, a maximum wage law for exactly this reason. Employers were forbidden to pay workers above a certain wage. It's exactly what you just said. You nailed it. Yeah.
So haven't we gone in the opposite directions where CEOs are concerned, where they're making 400 and 500% more, 400 and 500% times the amount of their lowest level paid employee?
Right. Well, I mean, the idea is that, you know, that a republic is, you know, which is really an empire, is the only stable form of civilization. Something which David Graeber, co-author of The Dawn of Everything, A New History of Humanity, and he also wrote The Democracy Project, it puts the lie to and says, no, actually, people are totally capable of self-organizing. And there's this book I'm reading right now, which talks about how participatory democracy has been used, where like 100% of a city's budgets in different parts of Latin America have been turned over to the populace through a facilitated process, of focus groups, and they decide exactly how the entire city budget gets spent democratically, direct democracy, no, you know, middle people in between. And it's shown that this works, but the people at the top are like, oh, no, this, you know, society isn't big enough for everybody to be involved in making decisions. That would just be crazy, you know. And you hear words like anarchy, which just means no rulers, get mixed up to describe, you know, utter chaos. And you know, and there's the saying, you know, what is order to the spider is chaos for the fly. And I think the spiders like their careful webs of order, and they just, anyway, not to beat a dead horse, but I did also want to say, oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go for it. I was just laughing. Sorry.
Really the way for one of many ways forward is that we also need economic power, because as long as, you know, we can fight for political control all we want, and we need to, I completely agree. And in addition, I think we also need to get rid of the ability of private corporations that are not democratically controlled by their stakeholders and by the community to own and control land. You know, there was an anti-rent movement 150 years ago where people were in New England were like, we don't want any more landlords and any more renters. Every household should own its own parcel of land. No ifs, ands, or buts. So I think that's, you know, that's just another thing to look at, is to look at ways to make it so that, you know, when for example, for real, when real, like you were talking about the acre of land costing $500,000 undeveloped, you know, I think we need, like, one example of a law that I had an idea for is, sorry, I know I'm
I hate to cut you short. I have to
go. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Make sure it goes for the renters for sale first. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this edition of PDX Progressive Talk Radio. It's been a blast, and I hope you have a fabulous, fabulous evening. Let's keep our heads up and keep going, progress toward the future.
About a mess of feelings makes me crazy, and I don't know you yet, but I miss you. You.